you as an individual to come like, here's what God's doing and I'm a little confused, or here's what I'm questioning. And if I question this with my pastor or my small group or my family, they're actually going to have opinions about that because they're invested, like our, right? Like our lives are so intertwined in different ways that it's going to shape how they respond and how they feel about what I'm sharing. I'm a spiritual director. I tell people, I don't care if you go to church or not on a Sunday. Like I care about your, you being authentically who you are with God and being able to make decisions out of that and to discern your life with God, in a way that has like no assumptions and no boundaries really.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Communitas podcast. We are so excited today, Joy and I, to be on the Zoom machine with Larissa Marks, coming to us from Oahu, Hawaii. And Larissa, I'll let you tell our listeners a little bit more about how you're connected to Communitas and some of the things that you're engaged in right now and what got you to where you are today.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff and Joy, for having me. I was already sharing with you, I've listened to several episodes of this podcast. It really resonates with me, the kinds of dynamic and deep conversations that you folks are having around mission and the church and what that looks like right now. So I am so glad to be here. I thank you for that. Thank you for having me. My connection with Communitas is more relational. So I'm pretty good friends with Brenda Renderos, who's on the board for Communitas, who I think showed up in a previous podcast episode. Yeah. So she and I are great friends. We've become friends over the last year or two. And immediately when we first met, it was like, you know, when you find the people who like, oh, you're just you, there's a synchness to it. There's just a beautiful friendship that formed really at the very beginning. So she's become a delightful friend. And I know about some of what is going on in Communitas in the wider community through her. She has shared different stories and snapshots and ways that she's been involved. And so I love what you folks are doing again. So yeah, for me, who I am. So I know that's a very big question. Like you mentioned, Jeff, I live on Oahu. I am a wife to my husband, Steve. We have 4 children. The youngest is 4 years old. The oldest is 14. So we're kind of right in the throes of a lot of different parenting stages with each of the kids.
Yeah.
Vocationally, I am primarily a spiritual director. I've been doing that for about 20 years, and I can share a little bit about what led into that. So that's my main area of focus and work. I do that, you know, generally one-on-one with people. As a spiritual director, I might meet with people every couple of weeks or once a month, depending on what they're hoping for. And I get to be a companion on the spiritual journey with people. And different folks are processing different things going on in their spirituality and their formation and their relationship with God. And I get to be this firsthand witness to how they're living through that and how they're navigating, responding to what God's doing, ways that God is showing up in their lives. And that's, to me, like such a deep gift and joy for myself. So again, I've been doing that for quite a while. Another thing I do, which is a real different realm, is I have a real estate license. And like I said, I live in Hawaii. I got my real estate license a couple years ago. My husband is a mortgage broker and he started his own mortgage company. And so right around 2020, he started his company, and we both of us are in this strange, what I would call a very strange industry that doesn't quite fit a lot of the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And our values. But the reason why both of us are working in this space is we really believe in generosity, in radical community. And we have been seeking ways to address some of the inequity in as it relates to land stewardship in Hawaii. So that could be a whole conversation, and feel free to ask me other questions about that. But one thing we're working on together is building a business that is diverting a fair amount of money to the poor and to nonprofit organizations outside of what we're doing. So we're generating money and income through our business and diverting a pretty large percentage of our income or our profits from to those places. And then another thing we're working on right now is called Green Line Hawaii, which is essentially a grassroots project. We're trying to return Native Hawaiian land back to Native Hawaiian people. And so that's a thing that's relatively new. We've started that in the last year or so and working with other people, individuals, and organizations to do that. It's basically raising down payment grants and funding so that people who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford to purchase land can be in a place to purchase land. So that's another thing I've been working on. I would say in the midst of all of that, I think an overarching value that I carry into every relationship and every decision is I want to be somebody who is caring for others and making space for others to feel a sense of belonging and safety and community. So I'm doing that with my work, with my spiritual direction work, with the real estate stuff, as a mom to my kids. Our youngest child, we fostered and adopted him. So that's another element to our family life. But I would say, yeah, like I think I love the part of the kingdom and the part of the way of Jesus that compels us to open and expand our hearts and our lives to others and to make space for that to happen. I'm part of a really vibrant community of other folks who are trying to do that in different ways. So my church community really is a community of believers who are in all kinds of spaces, nonprofit organizations and business and small group gatherings at people's homes. And so church to me is an expression of, you know, being in relationship with one another, having some sort of mission that compels us outward, and also engaging with God in a way that is transformative. So I know that's some of the language that you folks have in Communitas, and that really, I think that really aligns with how I think about my own life and my community. I grew up on Maui in Hawaii. My parents were raised Catholic, but they did not have a meaningful relationship with God as they were raised. And so I remember when I was about 5 years old, my mom, a friend of my mother's, invited our family to church. We hadn't been to church. I didn't know what church was. My mom and dad brought us, me and my brothers, to church. And my parents had a really significant catalytic experience of finding God and finding God with other folks. They are very different personalities. My dad is like a high thinker. My dad is a high feeler, but they each independently came to know Jesus, came to faith. And from that, I remember that point. It was a very distinct moment in my life. I saw it. And I remember also in the aftermath of that decision for my parents, seeing how much that shifted who they were. Like who they were really became oriented to Jesus. God kind of like seeped into our family life, and the values that we had and the culture we had in our family really was shaped by what we saw in scripture, what we saw in our church life. And that was a really just a foundation for me in my own spirituality. So essentially I was kind of raised in the church, but it wasn't some foregone conclusion. So I saw a shift, right? And I think for me, when I went to college, I was really open to whatever God had for me in that season of life. And in college, as I think this happens to a lot of people, when you leave your family of origin, you go off on your own, you go do something else, there's just a way that that can expand into new territory with God specifically. And so that's where I encountered God, I think, for myself, like, you know, right, like independent from my parents and independent from my family. There were some really powerful experiences of God that I had. I got connected with an organization called InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, which I was at USC in Los Angeles. So I got to participate in this really vibrant community of believers who were my peers for the first time. And that was, again, really formative. Out of college, Steve and I both joined staff with InterVarsity, and that's where we worked for over a decade. And I think both of us would describe that as a season of really being discipled by others, being mentored by others, and really that set us on a trajectory for who we are today and the kinds of people we are striving to grow into. Yeah, and like I said, right now we live on Oahu. We're part of a pretty vibrant community of churched people, not churched people, ex-churched people. Right. It's really the gamut. And yeah, it's exciting. It's messy. It's confusing. We host a lot of potlucks and meals at our house with family and friends. And we have barbecues that are fun and also deep. And I think we love to create spaces as a family to just be traveling companions with other people on the journey. So that's on. A little bit about my story.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I see why you and Brenda hit it off so quickly. and I want to point this out, especially for those that are listening that are part of the Communitas community. You've just given a really solid and practical and realistic definition to the word missional, which is, I mean, it's an older word now, it's been somewhat co-opted, but still that idea of living that kind of life that is looking outward. And as you probably know, the elements, or at least the purpose of the church within Communitas, it takes many, many forms, but the purpose is communion with God, community with others, and mission to the world.
Yeah.
So thank you for living that out so impressively in your context. I have a question. So I've been in one form of vocational ministry or another for the last 25 years or so. And it wasn't until about even maybe 10 years ago that the whole concept of spiritual direction or having a coach really started to become a curiosity in people's mind. Now it's almost as if you don't have a spiritual director or a coach, you know, so why the change? What's going on that's created this demand for this?
Ooh, what a beautiful question. I have a guess. I don't know if I have a fully formed answer. I think there's a trend. There has been a trend or a history in the westernized American church. That's my vantage point.
Sure.
So I can't speak for the global church, but I think in America, church spaces have really become places where oftentimes there's like a little handful of people who are doing a lot of the shepherding, right? That might be the one pastor.
Right.
That might be maybe a core team of leaders, and they're doing the shepherding, and they're doing the modeling, and they're doing the checking in on people. And it's become kind of a professionalized way of doing life. Mm-hmm. So I would say, I think people are realizing that's not great. That's not sustainable for anybody, right? Like, you imagine any church that's bigger than 20 to 30 people. Yep. How is one or two people in the central leadership, if you want to call it that, like, how are they really deeply tending to all those folks? They're not. And so it harms them. Like I think a lot of leaders are burning out and fizzling out and you know, and maybe they built that system, maybe they didn't. So I'm not really getting into like why that's the case, but I think that's just an observation that I've seen, that that's what's happening. So therefore, people who are spiritually seeking, spiritually questioning, spiritually trying to work things out, which really is all of us, right? It's all of us. But folks who are wanting some form of deeper processing, I think don't quite know where to go. And so I do think that people who are spiritual directors are uniquely positioned to be that kind of person with other people. I will also say, as a spiritual director myself, and as somebody who I have a spiritual director, I've had a spiritual director for many years, there's something that happens in that space that is so beautiful and unique. Like even if my pastor could function as my spiritual director, I think many spiritual directors are really good listeners.
Yep.
Really curious people who are asking good questions, really listening and holding space for others, and also people who are not afraid of the gray area of questioning and curiosity. And I think that's a unique element that you can find maybe with other people or in other community spaces. But I think in spiritual direction, that's what happens. It's also a sacred space for you as an individual to come, like, here's what God's doing and I'm a little confused, or here's what I'm questioning. And if I question this with my pastor or my small group or my family, they're actually going to have opinions about that because they're invested. Our lives are so intertwined in different ways that it's going to shape how they respond and how they feel about what I'm sharing. I'm a spiritual director. I tell people, I don't care if you go to church or not on a Sunday. Like it doesn't. I care about your you being authentically who you are with God and being able to make decisions out of that and to discern your life with God in a way that has like no assumptions and no boundaries, really. So I don't know if that quite answers your question. That's a hunch as to what, for me, as to what happens in spiritual direction and why more people are looking for that, I think. I also think out of like the season of COVID, I think church life in general, organized church life, has been shaken up. Yes. And then now it's kind of like, now where are we at, guys? Like, who wants to do this how it was before? Some people want it to go back to how it was.
Yep.
Other people are like, I want nothing about that. I want brand new. I want to like chuck that old version out and start afresh.
Right.
And other people are kind of in the middle and trying to figure out what they want and what they need. So I think we're all collectively in perhaps a season of higher discernment, maybe. And maybe spiritual direction is a way to help that along.
Yeah, that's a great answer. We're engaged in multiple contexts and cultures, some of which have, you know, their COVID happened 300 years ago. So, I mean, they've thrown it out a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Other cultures, not so much, but one thing we do see universally around the world is people wanting something more than an hour on Sunday, right? They want an experienced faith, a lived out faith, something that matters beyond, mm-hmm. you know, attending kind of a thing.
Right.
How is it for you? Because we kind of live in that paradigm of the believe, behave, belong metaphor, which kind of goes back, you know, at least 100 years in the United States, let's say, and it's shifting more now, it's certainly worldwide, into the belong first, right? And then and then behavior may follow, some modification may follow after belonging to a group of people that's living like you're living in Oahu. And then belief may come far later, right?
Yeah.
So In the role that you play as a spiritual director, do you ever run into situations where the established church or leaders in churches are wary of what you do or feel threatened by what you do?
That's such a great question. I don't know if I've ever asked that question. I would think it might feel threatening and scary and unknown to some people. Yes. And maybe especially people who are, if their whole job or their whole structure of community rests on a certain power dynamic or dynamic, it might feel threatening. And maybe, again, maybe that's why folks know intuitively that going to the institution, as it might be, for processing, you know, the grace space that they're in or the discernment season that they're in might actually not work out so well for them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that would be scary. And I don't think I've ever seen that exactly firsthand or directly. But if I take a step back and think about what kinds of conversations I have with people who come to me for spiritual direction, I'm like, yeah, if I were their pastor, I would maybe be a little worried, like where they might land, you know?
Right. Yeah. And yet it's so important for us as people of faith to not be threatened by the question. It's something's changing in our culture, which is so beautiful that people are no longer stifled from asking the hard questions.
Right.
And people of faith should be there to have the conversation, right? And not answers, but listen and process and walk along.
Right. Right. And I think to that point, I imagine what it was like for the disciples who are originally following Jesus, right? You get this group of an incredibly diverse group of people. They're living all kinds of walks of life. They're bringing in their own experiences and doubts and fears. And Jesus seems to me very clearly able to be with them in their questions. He asks hard questions himself. And so I love that idea that could believers become the best at being discerning, holding space for curiosity. I really hope that for us as a community and in our world. I don't think we're doing God or ourselves any service for like putting a lid on like, well, you just gotta just believe these things and it's real simple. Like we're human, and can we have space for one another to be our messy, authentic human selves, good, bad, ugly? And can we be people who create that kind of space for, yeah, like you said, belonging no matter what? Like I want that, when I imagine like even the life that I'm creating for my kids, I want them to know that they belong no matter what. And okay, great, let's teach you how to live good lives and, right, like respond appropriately to the challenges that may come. But I want you to know that your belonging is like, that's just a given. And God, that's what God communicates to us from the get-go, that's a given, that nothing we can do is going to mess that up. So yeah, I hope that as well.
I'm really fascinated by what you're noticing as far as historically where we've come from and how things are shaken up right now. It seems like you have a really good pulse on the current needs that are surfacing. I'm wondering, are there certain themes that you're seeing? Are there certain things that are kind of common to all that people are needing care and support around?
I think everybody on some level or in some way is looking for an experience of being seen and known and experiencing belonging. That might mean different things to each of us, right? For you, Joy, for you, Jeff, for myself, like, what does that look like? I actually don't always know. Sometimes I know. Sometimes I know what I need from other people or in my life to feel safe and secure and cared for. But sometimes I can't even describe that to my husband, even if he might be asking that question, right? And so I think we all want that to be loved, essentially. We all need patience and compassion and kindness from one another and from ourselves. I need that for myself. Like, I need to give myself that, and I need to offer that to other people. I think we all need to find healthy ways of attaching, you know, attachment with God, attachment with other people. Mm-hmm. I think we're all looking for that. And maybe that's an answer. Like, because we're all looking for those same things, I think we can have some grace as we all kind of work that out and figure that out. I will say, I've thought a lot about this, the feeling that we as humans might experience of like unsafety or isolation or loneliness. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of folks are struggling with those deeper things going on in our soul. And sometimes I'm like, man, couldn't God have created all of us without that? Wouldn't that have been simpler? But then I remember, wait, that's the thing that actually draws us to God, right? That's the thing. That's why God, the Father, God, Jesus, God, the Holy Spirit, like God, and our experience of God is so compelling because it's drawing us into relationship. But anyway, there's a way that because we're wired like that and we're all looking for that, I think we can also trust that we all experience the other feelings of like loneliness and isolation and despair even. And that's hard. That's hard for many of us to like know what to do with. No one teaches us that, right? And no one, or I wasn't taught that, what to do when you feel isolated. even in like the best of times, or even in a marriage or in a family life or in a church, when it seems like everyone else is doing great and you feel like I'm not. So I think I take comfort in the reality that, oh, probably everyone's kind of just struggling and trying to do their best.
Equally bumbling along the way.
I find it fascinating. A lot of what you're saying kind of relates to, I think, this next topic and question, which is, the big buzzword out there right now is deconstruction, right? But as people move from what used to be a very simple black and white world into a gray world, it's been sad to see that that's resulted in some folks abandoning faith altogether. So how do you walk people through that dark night, if you will, of kind of having their foundation crumble and then not knowing what to hold on to?
Right. Yeah, there are a lot of ways that I could respond to that. So the word deconstruction and what that means for different people, it means different things to folks. And so usually if somebody comes to me and says something like, my faith is being deconstructed, or I'm in a season of this, or I've left the faith and left the church, right? Like, there are different people who might identify themselves in some place along that, you know, in that journey. I think usually I want to know, well, what specifically to you, that this one person in front of me, what do you mean by that? What does that feel like to you? And how is that for you? Is that a place you want to be in? Is that a place that you're like desiring to stay in? And what is that like? And if not, if you want to move from that place into something else, like, what do you imagine that something else is? I think there are folks who are absolutely doing really beautiful and deep work with regards to their faith, with regards to maybe how they were raised in the church or the kind of spiritual scaffolding that they had before. And now they're like, man, life with God could actually be really more expansive than that. And maybe that's what some people mean by deconstruction. Yeah. And then others might be like, this is a container. I'm like fully done with it. And I'm jumping to a whole new container.
Right.
To me, so I think when I think about my own spiritual journey and folks that I'm engaged with, I think a lot of folks are in like dark territory where they are meandering their way through uncharted waters or something. And I think it's confusing for them. And I think it's really confusing to the people who knew like the old version of those people.
Yeah.
And so that can be really hard, and that there can be a lot of emotions attached to it. For me, in my own spiritual life, I think of it as like, you know, like when you have a young tree, and if you were to cut open, like slice open that tree, there'd be like 5 or 6 rings, right? That show kind of the aging of the tree and the seasons of life that that tree has been in. If you were to cut, you know, slice a different tree that was older and more weathered and maybe like decades or hundreds of years older, you would see, you know, more rings, right? And I feel like for me, as my faith has evolved, I honestly think it's more like this old tree that's just getting older. And some rings were a part of who I was 10, 20 years ago. My spirituality was like, it looked a certain way. It had a certain texture and feel to it. And I'm not leaving that if I'm aging and experiencing other things and adding more rings to my tree.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm chucking that out or hating it or saying goodbye to it. It's more like there's just who I am is evolving and I'm different. And I'm also carrying all these other experiences from my past and from my lineage with me. And I feel like that image to me captures a way that our faith can evolve. And we don't have to be afraid of what we're leaving behind. We can actually be really, I think we can be really grateful for it, and see ways that it served us. There were things we gleaned from those seasons. I'm even thinking back to like really specifically like other expressions of church or community or faith that I had. Yeah, again, like 20 years ago. And I think me right now maybe wouldn't have chosen those things, or that's not what I'm hoping for now. But I am also, I feel like there are ways that I can be grateful for some of those things that I've already experienced. So I think it's, like you said, there's a darkness to navigating something like deconstruction or whatever we want to call this experience that many of us either have had already or are going through right now. I think I have a lot of compassion for the folks who are in the midst of it. It's hard, it's confusing, and it's disorienting for us and for the people around us. And I keep saying this, but I think there's a level of grace and compassion that we can have on each other as we're going through it, and trust that God's not different. Like God is here. God is safe, and there's a security to us being able to like question and reconsider things, because I think God's in that and not outside of that.
I love that imagery of the tree. That's really, really
helpful.
Yeah.
Where do you see things going as you're looking back, you know, and you reflected on, we've had these dynamics and these expressions and things that some people are leaving, some people like, some people want to stay, some people want to move. Everyone's kind of in a different place on that map, so to speak. But what are some things that you see maybe happening next, or where people are heading in a general way?
Jesus's invitation for us to be the church and to be his followers, that has lasted through all kinds of crises and shifts and changes. And I know that will continue whether or not I'm getting out of bed today and like deciding to go to church or not go to church or have a nice prayer time or connect with God in my garden, whatever I decide. Like there's a way that the trajectory of God and his creation and the kingdom will continue. I hope that we can collectively, and I'm big, the big church, the global church, I hope that we can collectively co-create a really beautiful expression of the church for right now. Mm-hmm. And to me, what my heart holds out hope for is that it would be really expansive, like expansive in the sense that it can hold people being curious. It can hold people who come from very seemingly divergent experiences and perspectives. And that we as a in community can make a way so that a diversity of people, generational diversity, cultural diversity, ethnic diversity, all of those things, that really the church could embody that in a new way. And I think you're hearing my bias. I think I'm not a huge fan of a traditional version of church that, for whatever reason, everyone has to kind of show up and look alike or have the same perspective on things. I don't like that. That to me, if people want to choose that, okay, great. That you can choose that. Maybe that's your version that you really love and that feels good for you. Great. So I'm not hating on that or tearing that down. But I would say, I think for myself and many people that I know, we're looking for something that is diverse and where all of creation is really reflected in the church, and where everyone, there's a more equitable way of thriving for all of us and not just one or two of us.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, I love that. That's so good. Yeah, you probably just answered this question, but I feel compelled to ask it anyway. What encouragement or guidance or advice would you have for next generation leaders who are we're kind of coming into this, and they in some ways have a blank canvas, but in some ways they may not. So what would you say to them?
I think the really beautiful expressions of church and community come when individual people and bodies of people, groups of people are asking the question, like, what's the best version of this that we can imagine together? And making space for that version. So, I think it's, I already mentioned this, but our family, we host a fair amount of potlucks, right? And our potlucks are, we usually communicate to people like, hey, we're having a potluck on Saturday. You're welcome to bring whatever you want. And if it's nothing, if you just bring your presence and yourself, we welcome that. And so what results is a beautiful expression of community and family that is always surprising to me. It's always surprising. Like, what did people bring? I don't know. I didn't plan the menu. I didn't micromanage things. And so I wonder if that is an image, or it could be a metaphor as we think about church together. Like, could we imagine it like a potluck where we bring what we have, we bring who we are, and whatever comes out of that is like, that's what it was supposed to be for however long it was supposed to be. So I would hope that, I would encourage us all to show up as we are, to find ways to do that in community with others. And I think there's a courage that demands and requires of us. Like, it's a courageous thing for me to show up and say, like, man, guys, I've had a really hard week. I'm exhausted and I don't feel like I'm showing up with much. For me, that's a really hard thing to admit to anybody in my life. But I've noticed when I am brave enough to admit that in relationships with other people, my experience of that relationship or that moment is usually really tender and really life-giving. And there's a way that I experience rest and joy and life So I would encourage us to show up as we are, to trust that something will come out of that. And to just pay attention, like, how is God in that? Like, what is God doing here? Not like what we're hoping for or we wish would have happened before, but like, how can we be present to what's right in front of us? I think that's a hard task to do, mostly because, again, I'm going to speak for American church culture, Western culture. It's very future oriented. It's like, what's the plan or where do we want to get to? And how, you know, what's it going to take to get from A to B? I think when we do that, sometimes we miss out on what's actually the person in front of me. How can we foster and co-create some form of love together with one another right here? So I think I would encourage folks to pay attention to what's right in front of them, the people in front of them, the neighbors, the opportunities to gather others and to do something that maybe might have God, you know, in the middle of it, and to try that and see if it feels resonant and it feels life-giving.
And the preparation for that is so different than the professional preparation, like you were speaking mm-hmm. earlier about the professional ministry and where you're going and you're getting a set of skills and abilities. And what you're talking about is a whole different thing where you're really practicing vulnerability and mm-hmm. growing as yourself as a leader, rather than just having all these tools and things that you can do and prepare. You're practicing being vulnerable and showing up. And that really, I think, models for others how to do that. So as you're talking, I'm just noticing that's a really different kind of preparation than maybe what we've been doing thus far for people who are working in churches or on mission and ministry in different ways. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. My experience the last 10 years or so in various forms of faith expression and worship, I've really moved from what I prepare for a group of people. How that looks now is that's the fallback, right? Like maybe we'll get to that, but the work really happens when we're surprised or we're open or we let the Spirit do its work and then see where it goes from there, you know, as opposed to here's my exegesis of the second chapter of John, you know, which I'm desperate to share because I've studied it all week, but
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's just a different way of being, and it feels so much more fruitful for community.
Right.
And there's not always just somebody up front.
Right. Can I give one quick example? So please. I was invited to lead a workshop for a group of pastors. This was a couple weeks ago, and they wanted me to come in and lead some sort of session on spiritual wellness, right? So you invite the spiritual director in, come give a sermon on spiritual wellness. They didn't use the word sermon, but I think that's what they meant. As I was preparing, I was just kind of thinking about like who these people were. I'd never met any of them previous to the actual retreat, but I was just holding some space in my prayer time to like ask God, what are you doing in these people's lives? What kind of space could we hold together for my 90-minute slot that I was given? And I think a version of me could have said, I'm just going to prepare a sermon. I'm going to go, you know, do some mm-hmm. scripture study and find the 5 good points and offer them a, you know, a thing. In my prayer time, I felt like God inviting me to do a group observation on plants. Okay, that's very specific. But I just sense I've been gardening a lot. So a lot of my spiritual metaphors has been coming from my garden.
Yeah.
But I felt like God say, like, bring a plant that looks really healthy and bring a plant, one of your potted plants that is like almost dead. Sure. Bring that and allow me to speak to the group through those metaphors and make some space for conversation around that. And it was I came in with like a little bit of framework for that discussion, but it was very not, you know, it wasn't very detailed and worked out.
Yeah.
But I really had a sense like, this is what I need to do with the space. And what ended up happening was like fascinating and surprising to me. Everybody had all these beautiful observations about the plants specifically and their own lives, like what it looks like when we're spiritually thriving and what fuels times or seasons when we are thriving and what in our lives are sapping out the energy, like this dead plant right in front of us. Like what are ways that we, some of us feel like that dying plant, and like what's our sense as we listen to one another and in prayer time together with God, like what's our sense of what God's saying and inviting us to? And it ended up being a powerful discussion. It was kind of like this workshop around these plants. And we ended up having some space in silence together to listen to whatever God was saying. And that to me, I left that time like, wow, I didn't expect that. I barely planned for it. And what ended up happening was really powerful and beautiful. Yeah. And I loved it. I loved leading it. And I really think that people were glad to participate in it. But yeah, that's one example of like, oh, I'm going to shift my plan and really try and pay attention to what it seems like God is inviting us into together. And yeah. I'll facilitate it. I can lead it. But part of my leading is making some space for presence to God together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said. That's really good. Well, Larissa, it feels like there's so much more we could tackle here. So I would love to carry on the conversation. I particularly, it'd be fun to have you and Steve on to talk about your missional enterprise, let's call it that. Because that sounds really, really fascinating and super cool as well. So how can people get a hold of you? When you do your spiritual direction, is that strictly local, regional, or give us a little information about that.
Great. Like I said, I do things in person, but I actually do a lot of spiritual direction one-on-one with people online. So anybody, no matter where they're in the world, I meet with missionaries who are in Thailand. So yeah, reach out to me. My website, you can find me online, is Larissa, LARISSA, Marks, MARKS.com. It's easy to find. I'm barely on social media these days, so my website is probably the best way to reach out to me. Feel free to shoot me a good old-fashioned email and initiate a conversation. I love connecting with people, and I welcome, conversations with folks. So I'd welcome that.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We'll put all of that in the show notes as well. And what a joy it is to spend some time with you. And I look forward to doing that more often. And thank you for being with us and the work that you do. It's deeply meaningful. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And you have been listening to another episode of the Communitas podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, we encourage you to share it with your friends or leave a rating for us. We are available on all the major podcast platforms. And you can even subscribe to our podcast, in which case you will get a reminder every time a new episode drops. We look forward to being with you again on the next episode of the Communitas Podcast.